Hi everyone, I'm Mark Esper. Welcome to No Spoiler Reviews, the podcast for movie reviews with the surprises left in. If you ever felt like you've already seen the film by just reading a review or had the story spoiled by its trailers, well then this is the podcast for you. In this episode, you'll find all the latest No Spoiler Reviews, including Daniel Craig and Rami Malek in No Time to Die, Bill Murray in Wes Anderson's The French Dispatch, Jamie Lee Curtis in Halloween Kills, and the hotly anticipated Venom Let There Be Carnage with Tom Hardy and Woody Harrelson. So if that's your kind of thing and you don't like knowing the ending before you start, then let's get started with Daniel Craig and co. in his much-delayed final outing as James Bond in No Time to Die. Set 5 years after the events of 2015 Spectre, James Bond has now disappeared into a Jamaican retirement. However, when a Russian scientist and his deadly genetic weapon are abducted, Bond's old friend and ex-CIA agent Felix Leiter pulls him back in. With questions left unanswered and characters from Bond's previous life once again putting the world at risk, can 007 save the world once more? Or is there a new figure behind these events who threatens Bond's existence with more than just global annihilation? Well, if we had all the time in the world, then maybe Daniel Craig's revitalizing James Bond would have even more years to run. Yet whilst he has chosen to bow out now after 15 years, it's clear that both Craig and producers Barbara Broccoli and Michael G. Wilson still have more to say after Spectre, and No Time to Die is the result. With a franchise that has constantly sought to reinvent itself, thankfully much of Bond's back catalogue of bad behaviour has now been put into check. Gone is the womanising and predatory arrogance that so marked out Sean Connery's time, and now we have a Bond who's truly stripped naked whilst his co-stars get to keep their clothes on. Still haunted by the ghost of Casino Royale's Vesper Lindt, Daniel Craig finally gets to move beyond the regrets of his past with paramour Madeleine Swann, as played by Léa Seydoux. Or does he? This is because hiding in her past is a secret that threatens them both in the shape of Rami Malek's Lucifer Safin. Embittered and battered from the movie's opening scene, sadly it's his presence that is mired between the script's competing demands. On one hand, as a Bond villain, he needs to be a sadist on a global scale, and also a wronged individual hell-bent on revenge. Unfortunately though, and through no fault of Malek himself, who has some truly unsavoury lines to munch through, the result is far more Dr. No than Dr. Yes. Whereas 2015 Spectre's reintroduction of Ernst Stavro Blofeld and the Spectre Syndicate was supposedly to introduce something to build upon, No Time to Die immediately tears it all down. Add to this the deadpan one-liners that clash to the ground, and you quickly find yourself inside a movie that stars James Bond, but isn't a James Bond movie per se. For sure, the gadgets are back and Aston Martin have duly emptied their garages with some of the finest cars ever to feature in the franchise. Yet the longer it goes on, the clearer it becomes that we're moving into the territory of ticking boxes and tying up loose ends. Following on from 2015 Spectre, Bond's relationship with Léa Seydoux's Madeleine Swann unsurprisingly comes into focus, and we find that the world of British intelligence has moved on since 007. Yet fortunately, this kicks the door open for a breath of fresh air that is Lashana Lynch. As a newly assigned 00 agent, her asides hit below the belt and consistently find their targets. Like a weaponized agent of Phoebe Waller-Bridge, her character is a rogue assassin led inside the script who's clearly been charged with cutting down any dead wood that she finds. Couple this with a much improved standoff between Christoph Waltz Blofeld and Daniel Craig, and No Time to Die isn't a film without flashes of brilliance still to bring some sparkle to the canon. Yet in the end, the film's finale becomes a microcosm of the movie itself. Whereas Skyfall left enough screen time for Craig's Bond to ache and brood, No Time to Die's 163 minutes makes no similar concessions to character depth or investigation. Instead, in desperately seeking to add pathos to a formula that's almost contractually obliged to careen out of control, the film goes for broke with a surprise ending that could possibly split opinion. So with Daniel Craig's Mr. Kiss Kiss Bang Bang having now shot his six, it remains to be seen if the Broccoli's rolled dice will come good. Delayed due to the pandemic and staunchly sticking out for a lucrative cinema release, the gamble looks like it will pay off. That said, whilst there are certainly enough ingrained aspects to make No Time to Die a commercial success, I'll warrant that this latest vodka martini may leave some with an indifferent aftertaste. Either way, see it. It's unavoidable, but it is clearly Spectre Part 2. See No Time to Die now at cinemas worldwide while you can. So with James Bond having shaken our vodkas and stirred our martinis, let's enter the art house inflected world of director Wes Anderson and his latest release, The French Dispatch. Situated in the fictional French city of Ennui-sur-Blasé, director Wes Anderson's latest comic opera takes place inside the offices of The French Dispatch. An American newspaper set adrift on a wave of Gallic nostalgia. Its staff rushed to assemble their latest issue. Yet, from the first archly perched cigarette to the quaffed sentences that follow, you'll either love or hate what's about to follow. Once again, as with 2004's The Life Aquatic, Bill Murray is central to the plot. As the French Dispatch's editor, his presence bookends the film's inventive storyline of editorials and features. However, that said, if you were expecting a return to the triumphant folly of the Grand Budapest Hotel, or for Murray to step into the surprisingly deaf shoes of Ralph Fiennes, then you will discover that both are overly self-occupied. Whereas the Grand Budapest Hotel cartwheeled joyously from one scene to another, the French Dispatch quickly mires itself in self-harm. And the reason for that is comic. By deliberately trying to stick to a meter that is so rhythmic to the scenery, the film's humour never relaxes long enough to invite you in, and the subsequent wound is a fatal one. Like a private joke strung out for 103 minutes, it's far more likely that you'll be squirming in your seat after the first minute than the 50th. Linger any longer than that, and you'll be relegated to an evening of Spot the Celebrity Thespian. And whilst there are plenty of worthy candidates, Tilda Swinton smites all before her. At the back end of the concrete masterpiece, which is by far the best segment of the movie, Tilda delivers a lecture that immediately marks her out. Through dint of accent, deportment, and delivery, it's just another quintessential disappearing act that will leave you wondering just how she did it. Yet, in the end, for the beautifully made film that it is, The French Dispatch only wants to be loved on its own terms. Caught between the pages of its best intentions, Anderson's stories become a suffocating slog, whereas a real-life editor would have dropped several so as to save the issue. You can see The French Dispatch worldwide at your local cinema from the 21st or 22nd of October, depending on the country that you're in. Okay, with October winding down to its annual grisly close, it's only timely that John Carpenter's Halloween franchise rolls into town so as to put a chill into your bones. So if you've got your pumpkin ready and you don't know if you're in for a trick or a treat, then let's get stuck into Halloween Kills now. It's Halloween, again. And the survivors of Michael Myers' various attempts at slaughter, dismemberment, and death have gathered for a karaoke night in Haddonfield. Yet unbeknownst to them and courtesy of a 15-minute flashback, Michael is alive and well. Well on the way to doing what he does every Halloween, as in killing people and generally tormenting his sister, Laurie Strode, aka Jamie Lee Curtis, and any of her remaining offspring. However, this time, they're really, really going to get him. Or possibly not. Again, let's see. So, this year's Halloween Kills is a direct sequel to 2018's Halloween, which in itself was a reboot slash distillation of the previous 9 movies. All the familiar faces are back, and similar to the previous Halloween movies, it's looking to heap intrigue into the backstories of the living and those who previously received dialogue. As usual, Michael Myers says nothing. Only ever appearing in a long shot, or jump cut, or a loud audio cue, Michael's main talents are covering large distances in seconds, walking through fire, walls, bullets, or whatever else the script calls for. As a film acting merely as a cocktail for people walking to houses with dim lighting, Halloween Kills does at least try to share some new blood around. An elderly mixed-race couple gets butchered, as does a gay couple who, against all advice, have moved into Michael's childhood home. There's also a further sprinkling of a backstory when a beloved character ubiquitously bows out at the end of Michael's kitchen knife. Yet the one major casualty not to return is suspense. Whereas the first Halloween was all about atmosphere, Halloween Kills has none. If it does clutch at anything new, it's the Western genre, where the townsfolk decide to take matters into their own hands and hunt Michael down. However, whilst there's an interesting theme that touches upon the dangers of mob mentality, like Laurie Strode, Halloween Kills blows it when it should bludgeon a decent point home. As a result, Halloween Kills killed me, and it might kill you too, and any interest you might have ever had in the series. As a white flag that's clearly run out of red splatter, this really is a sequel without any merit, ideas, or coherent characters. So whilst I don't think any of these absences will seriously hinder any further adventures in knife sharpening or firewalking, Halloween is now seemingly lumbering towards unintentional comedy and derision. You'll be able to see Halloween Kills worldwide from the 14th/15th of October in selected cinemas, depending on which country you're in. Now, in the last of our no-spoiler reviews for this month's episode, let's start salivating for the latest symbiotic sequel in the life of Eddie Brock, aka Tom Hardy, in director Andy Serkis's Venom, Let There Be Carnage. Following on from 2018's Venom, Venom Let There Be Carnage, reporter Eddie Brock is wrestling with Venom, the alien symbiote who's taken up residency in his body. Down on his luck and experiencing distinct flatmate blues with Venom, Eddie is now offered a career-changing lifeline. Get convicted serial killer Cletus Kasady to reveal the location of his victims' bodies, and Eddie's career will be forever transformed. Yet there's an unforeseen price. Kasady will only talk provided that Eddie guarantees that he will print a specific message within the piece's headline. Who is the message for? And should Eddie take the deal, or will he suddenly unleash carnage upon all of those around him? Well, for many, 2018's Venom was a sweet and sour experience. With the critics hating it and the audiences loving it, a sequel was never really in doubt. So whilst the character remains straddled between the universes of Sony and Marvel, the one clear takeaway from Venom Let There Be Carnage is that Sony has lost none of its touch for bravery. And if there's a quality that so marked out the first movie, it's the fact that Sony's Venom had its own voice. Clearly eschewing the well-established way that Marvel's movies handle their characters, Sony's Venom movies trample all over the Marvel playbook and markedly forge their own path. By embracing black comedy with loud frenetic set pieces that never last long enough to ever become boring, Venom Let There Be Carnage is another avalanche of ideas sandwiched into a 97-minute runtime. Having clearly absorbed many of the feelings about the first movie, this latest Venom movie is one with a nitrous oxide tune-up. From Marco Beltrami's bewitching score to Robert Richardson's creatively infused cinematography, director Andy Serkis has clearly got both hands on the scale and intensity required to bring Venom up to the next level. Add to this the quality pairing of Stephen Graham and Tom Hardy, finally on screen together, and the suitably demented Woody Harrelson as Cletus Kasady, and Andy Serkis has all his thespian boxes ticked. Yet the further delight is the way that Serkis incorporates novel visual storytelling techniques to get vital exposition across while still addressing the arc of his characters. Because this time, within his unstable marriage of convenience, Venom is the emotionally smart guy to Eddie's bruised ego. By allowing the characters to emotionally grow throughout the movie, Eddie and Venom become increasingly distinct as the odd couple who really must learn to live with one another. Yet this may well not be enough for the cine-literate lions who can't handle salad with their supper. If some of the best integrated action sequences of recent times can't convince the naysayers, then its gloriously over-the-top violence won't do it either. Deliberately hovering beneath a 15 certificate, the head chewing is wisely kept back for the bigger moments, and the F-bombs only surgically strike when they're needed to. Loud, lively, and unrepentantly preposterous, this is superhero filmmaking done differently, and the result is fabulously entertaining. So, if you didn't enjoy 2018's Venom, it's fair to say you won't be converted by this second movie's rampant charge into a similar sunset. However, if you're beginning to tire of origin stories done by appointment or strict adherence to overarching conventions, then you might want to look away from the post-credit scene. As a franchise that sets a lot of store by giving its fans exactly what they want, the final 5 minutes may either be a cause for celebration or disappointment, depending on what happens next. In the meantime, see Venom Let There Be Carnage in cinemas now. It's a joyously bonkers affair, and you really should share in the clear love that Andy Serkis and Tom Hardy have for Venom by buying a ticket today. Yummy. And that about wraps it up for this episode. To do a quick recap, we reviewed Daniel Craig and Rami Malek in No Time to Die, Bill Murray and Wes Anderson's The French Dispatch, Jamie Lee Curtis in Halloween Kills, and Venom Let There Be Carnage with Tom Hardy and Woody Harrelson. So, if you like what you heard and you fancy having some more No Spoiler reviews delivered to your favourite listening device, then please consider subscribing. Please tell your friends, your family, and anyone else you know who loves movies. Please hit the bell, smash the like, and share the podcasts. It really does make a difference, and we do appreciate your support. That said, if there's a recent movie that you've missed or haven't heard us cover, then why not download some of our previous podcasts or drop us a line at info@nospoilerreviews.com so we can include it in an upcoming episode. Until then, please keep safe and take all reasonable precautions, and I wish you all the very best for a spoiler-free time. Look forward to seeing you on November the 14th. All the best. Bye.